One hell of a tip. Can we leave the lecture for tomorrow so I can just enjoy? Fine, I said through gritted teeth, but I'm driving you home tonight. Fine, but you're not allowed to yell at me on the drive. I can't make any promises.
21. Family Emergency. Naomi. My feet were begging for a break, but the $20,000 in my apron gave me more than enough energy to face the final hour of my shift. Naomi! I spotted Sloan at a table in the corner with middle-aged biker babes and library board members Blaze and Agatha. Sloan had her hair pulled back in a perky ponytail and was wearing cutoffs and flip-flops. Blaze and Agatha were in their usual uniform of denim and vegan leather. Hey, I greeted them with a spring in my step. Out on the town? We're celebrating, Sloan explained. The library just got a big fat grant that I didn't even remember applying for. Not only does that mean we can start offering free community breakfast and upgrade the second floor computers, I can also officially offer you that part-time gig. Are you serious? I asked, elation rising inside me.
As serious as a nun in detention, Blaze said, slapping the table.
Sloan grinned. It's yours if you want it. I want it. The librarian held out her hand.
Welcome to the Knockabout Public Library, Ms. Community Outreach Coordinator. You officially start next week. Come by this weekend and we'll talk about your new duties.
I grabbed her hand and shook it. Then I hugged her. Then I hugged Blaze and Agatha.
Can I buy you beautiful, amazing ladies around? I asked, releasing a dazed-looking Agatha.
A public librarian can't say no to free drinks. It's in the town charter, Sloan said.
Neither can us literary support of lesbians, Agatha added. My wife is right, Blaze agreed.
I floated through the crowd on the dance floor and plugged in the order for my new bosses. I was thinking about the car I could now afford and the desk I wanted to buy Waylay for her room when Lucien appeared.
I believe you owe me a dance, he said, holding out his hand.
I laughed. I guess it's the least I can do since you let me win.
I never let anyone win, he assured me, taking my tray and setting it at a table of lady horse farmers who didn't seem to mind.
That's very mercenary of you, I observed. The band shifted into a slow, twangy tune about lost love. Lucien pulled me into his arms, and once again, I found myself wondering why Knockemout had such a large population of impossibly sexy men. I was also wondering what Lucien's motive was for asking me to dance. He struck me as the type of man who never did anything without an ulterior motive.
Knox and Nash, he began.
I congratulated myself on being so astute. What about them?
They're my best friends. Their feud has run its course. I want to make sure it doesn't get stirred back up.
What does that have to do with me?
Everything.
I guffawed right in the man's face. You think I'm going to reignite some feud that I had nothing to do with in the first place?
You're a stunning woman, Naomi. More than that, you're interesting, funny, and kind. You're worth fighting for.
Well, thank you for your kind but bizarre opinion, but you can rest easy knowing that Knox and I can barely stand being in the same room.
That doesn't always mean what you think it means, he said.
He's rude, mercurial, and blames me for everything.
Perhaps because you make him feel things he doesn't want to feel,
Lucien pointed out. Like what? Murderous?
What about Nash?
He asked. Nash is the opposite of his brother, but I just got out of a long-term relationship. I'm in a new town trying to do what's best for my niece, who hasn't had the easiest life. There's no time left on the clock to explore things with any man, I said firmly.
Good, because I know you'd hate to unintentionally add fuel to the fire.
What started their stupid fire in the first place? I asked.
Stubbornness, idiocy, ego, he said vaguely. I knew better than to expect a straight answer from a man who was like a brother to the Morgans.
Hey, Naomi, can we add an order of...
Sloan cut off mid-sentence. The petite blonde was staring open-mouthed up at Lucien like she'd just been sucker-punched. I felt Lucien's entire body go rigid. My heart sank with the realization that I'd somehow betrayed my new friend.
Hey, I said weakly, do you know...
My awkward introduction was unnecessary.
Sloan,
Lucien said. While I shivered at the ice in his tone, Sloan had the opposite reaction. Her expression went mutinous, and an emerald fire snapped in her eyes.
Is there an asshole convention in town I wasn't aware of?
Still charming as always, Lucien snapped back.
Fuck off, Rollins.
With that parting shot, Sloan spun around and marched toward the door. Lucien still hadn't moved a muscle, but his gaze was glued to her retreating back. His hands, still on my hips, gripped me hard.
You about ready to unhand my waitstaff, Luce?
Knox growled behind me. Startled, I yelped. There were too many pissed off people in my vicinity. Lucien released me, gaze remaining on the door.
Are you okay? I asked him.
He's fine,
Knox said.
I'm fine.
It was clearly a lie. The man looked as though he wanted to commit a cold-blooded murder. I wasn't sure who I should attempt to fix first.
Dinner tomorrow,
he said to Knox.
Yeah, dinner.
With that, he headed for the door. Is he okay? I asked Knox.
How the hell should I know?
He asked irritably. The door opened just as Lucien got to it, and Wiley Ogden, creepy ex-police chief, stepped inside. The man flinched, then covered it, poorly, with a smirk when he saw Lucien in front of him. They stared at each other for a long moment before Wiley stepped sideways, giving him a wide berth. What in the hell was that? I asked.
Nothing,
Knox lied. Silver whistled from the bar and waved him over. Knox headed in her direction, swearing under his breath. The guy was wound tighter than a mummy wrapped in Spanx.
Did Sloan just leave?
Blaze demanded, arriving at my side with Agatha on her heels.
Yeah, I was dancing with Lucien Rollins. She took one look at him and left. Did I do something wrong?
Blaze blew out a breath.
That's not good.
Agatha shook her head.
Definitely not good. They hate each other.
Who could possibly hate Sloan? Isn't she the nicest person in Northern Virginia? Agatha shrugged.
There's some kind of sticky history between those two. They grew up next door to each other. Didn't run the same crowds or anything. No one knows what happened, but they can't stand the sight of each other.
I'd been caught dancing with my new friend slash boss's mortal enemy. Damn it. I needed to make this right. At least ignorance was a plausible defense. I was already reaching for my phone when it started ringing. It was Steph.
Shoot, I have to take this, I told the bikers.
Hey, is everything okay?
Witty, I've got bad news.
My heart stopped and then stuttered to a start again. I knew that tone of voice. This wasn't we're out of champagne and ice cream. This was family emergency.
What's wrong? Is Waylay okay?
I plugged my other ear with my finger to hear over the band.
Way's fine, he said. But Nash was shot tonight. They don't know if he's going to pull through. He's in surgery.
Oh my God, I whispered.
Some sergeant named Grave notified Liza. He drove her to the hospital. He's sending someone to notify Knox.
Knox.
I found him through the crowd behind the bar, half smiling at something a customer said. He looked up and locked eyes with me. My face must have telegraphed something because Knox vaulted over the bar and started pushing his way toward me through the crowd.
I'm sorry, babe, Steph said. I've got Way here at Liza's with all the dogs. We're fine. You do whatever you need to do.
Knox reached me and grabbed my arms.
What's wrong? Are you okay? I have to go, I said into the phone and disconnected. The front door opened, and I saw two officers in uniform looking grim. My breath hitched. Knox, I whispered.
Right here, baby. What happened?
His eyes were bluer in this light, searingly blue and serious as he held on to me. I shook my head. It's not me. It's you.
What's me?
With a shaking finger, I pointed at the officers making their way to us.
Knox, we need to talk, the taller one said.
I backed up the truck for the third time and pulled forward before finally being satisfied with my park job. The hospital rose in front of me like a glowing beacon. An ambulance unloaded a patient on a gurney at the emergency department entrance. Its light painted the parking lot in red and white. I puffed out a breath, hoping it would settle the anxiety that was burbling in my stomach like a bad chowder. I could have gone home. I should have. But when I'd finished my shift, I drove towards the man who had tossed me his keys and told me to drive myself home. He'd made me promise before he'd followed the deputies out the door into the night. Yet here I was at 2 a.m., disobeying direct orders and sticking my nose where it didn't belong. I should definitely go home. Yep, for sure, I decided, getting out of the truck and walking right on in through the front door. Given the hour, there was no one sitting at the information desk. I followed the signs to the elevators and the surgical intensive care unit on the third floor. It was eerily quiet on the floor. All signs of life were limited to the nurse's station. I started toward it when I spotted Knox through the glass in the waiting room, the wide shoulders and impatient stance immediately recognizable. He paced the dimly lit room like a captive tiger. He must have sensed me in the doorway because he turned swiftly as if to face an enemy. His jaw clenched, and it was only then that I saw the turmoil, anger, frustration, fear. I brought you coffee, I said, lamely holding up the travel mug I'd prepared for him in Honky Tonk's kitchen.
Thought I told you to go home, he growled.
And I didn't listen. Let's just move past the part where either one of us pretends to be surprised.
I don't want you here.
I flinched, not at his words, but at the pain behind them. I put the coffee down on an end table stacked with magazines that pretended they could distract visitors from the endless loop of fear. Knox, I began, taking a step toward him.
Stop,
he said. I didn't listen and slowly closed the distance between us. I'm so sorry, I whispered.
Just get the fuck out of here, Naomi. Just go. You can't be here.
His voice was ragged, frustrated. I'll go, I promised. I just wanted to make sure you were okay.
I'm fine.
The words came out bitterly. I raised my hand to lay on his arm. He flinched away from me.
Don't,
he said harshly. I said nothing but stood my ground. I felt like I could breathe in his anger like it was oxygen.
Don't,
he said again. I won't.
If you touch me right now,
he shook his head.
I'm not in control, Naomi.
Just tell me what you need. His laugh was dry and bitter.
What I need is to find the motherfucking bastard who did this to my brother. What I need is to rewind the clock so I didn't waste the last however many years over some stupid fucking fight. What I need is for my brother to wake the fuck up.
His breath hitched, and I had no control over my own body. Because one second I was standing in front of him, and the next I was wrapping my arms around his waist, holding on and trying to absorb his pain. His body was tight and vibrating as if he was seconds away from coming apart.
Stop,
he said on a broken whisper.
Please.
but I didn't. I held on tighter, pressing my face to his chest. He swore under his breath, and then his arms were around me, crushing me to him. He buried his face in my hair and clung to me. He was so warm, so solid, so alive. I held on to him for dear life and willed him to release some of what he'd kept bottled up.
"Why don't you ever fucking listen?"
he grumbled, lips moving against my hair. "Because sometimes people don't know how to ask for what they really need. You needed a hug."
"No, I didn't,"
he rasped. He was quiet for a long moment, and I listened to his heartbeat.
"I needed you."
My own breath tripped in my throat. I tried to pull back to look up at him, but he held me where I was.
"Just shut up, Daisy," he advised.
"Okay." His hand stroked down my back and then up again, over and over until I melted into him. I wasn't sure which one of us was giving the comfort and which was receiving it now.
"He's out of surgery,"
Knox said finally, pulling back incrementally. His thumb traced my lower lip.
"They won't let me see him till he wakes up."
"Will he want to see you?" I asked.
"I don't give a fuck what he wants. He's seeing me."
"What was the fight about?" He sighed. When he reached up and tucked a strand of hair behind my ear, I swooned internally.
"I don't really feel like talking about it, Daisy."
"You have something better to do?"
"Yeah. Yelling at you to go the hell home and get some sleep. Waylay's first day of school is tomorrow. She doesn't need a zombie aunt pouring dish soap on her cereal."
"First of all, we're having eggs, fruit, and yogurt for breakfast," I began, then realized he was trying to distract me. "Was it about a woman?" He looked at the ceiling. "If you start counting to 10, I will kick you in the shin," I warned. He sighed.
"No, it wasn't about a woman."
"Besides love, what's worth losing a brother over?"
"Fucking romantics," he said.
"Maybe if you get it out, instead of bottling it up, you'll feel better." He studied me for another one of those long, pensive beats, and I was sure he was about to tell me to get my ass home.
"Fine."
I blinked in surprise. Okay, wow, so this is happening. Maybe we should sit?" I suggested, eyeing up the empty vinyl chairs.
"Why does talking have to be a whole damn thing with women?"
he grumbled as I led us to a pair of chairs. "Because anything worth doing is worth doing right." I sat and patted the chair next to me. He sat, stretching his long legs in front of him and staring blankly at the window.
"I won the lottery," he said.
"I know that. Liza told me."
"Took home $11 million, and I thought it was the answer to everything. I bought the bar, a building or two, invested in Jeremiah's plan for some fancy-ass salon, paid off Liza J's mortgage. She'd been struggling since Pop died."
He looked down at his hands as his palms rubbed against the thighs of his jeans.
"It felt so fucking good to be able to solve problems."
I waited.
"Growing up, we didn't have much. And after we lost Mom, we didn't have anything. Liza J and Pop took us in and gave us a home, a family. But money was tight. And in this town, you've got some kids driving fucking BMWs to school on their 16th birthdays or spending their weekends competing on $40,000 horses. Then there was me and Nash and Lucy. None of us grew up with anything, so maybe we took a few things that weren't ours. Maybe we weren't always on the straight and narrow, but we learned to be self-sufficient. Learned that sometimes you gotta take what you want instead of waiting for someone to give it to you."
I handed him his coffee and he took a sip.
Then Nash gets a bug up his ass and decides to become Dudley fucking Do-Right.
Which must have felt like a rejection to Knox, I realized.
I gave him money,
Knox said.
Or tried to, at least. The stubborn son of a bitch said he didn't want it. Who says no to that?
Apparently your brother.
Yeah, apparently.
Restless, he shoved his fingers through his hair again.
We went back and forth about it for almost 2 years. Me trying to shove it down his throat, him rejecting it. We threw a few punches over it. Finally, Liza J made him take it. And you know what my stupid little brother did with it?
I set my teeth in my lower lip because I knew.
That son of a bitch donated it to the Knockemout PD to build a new goddamn police station. The Knox Morgan fucking municipal building.
I waited for a few beats, hoping there was more to the story. But when he didn't continue, I slumped in my seat. Are you saying you and your brother have barely spoken in years because he put your name on a building?
I'm saying he refused money that could have set him up for the rest of his life and gave it to the cops instead. The cops who had hard-ons for three teenagers just raising a little hell. Fuck. Lucian spent a week in jail on some bullshit charges when we were 17. We had to learn to take care of things ourselves instead of running to a crooked chief and his dumb fuck cronies. And Nash just up and hands over $2 million to them.
The picture was coming into focus. I cleared my throat. Are the same cops still with the department? Knox hitched his shoulders in a shrug.
No.
Does Nash allow the officers under him to take advantage of their position? I pressed. He poked his tongue into the inside of his cheek.
No.
Is it fair to say that Nash cleaned up the department and replaced bad cops with good cops?
Don't know how good Grave is, considering he still likes to drag race on the weekends,
Knox said stubbornly. I put my hand on his arm and squeezed. Knox.
What?
He asked the carpet. Look at me. When he did, I saw the frustration etched on his gorgeous face. I cupped his cheeks in my hands. His beard was coarse against my palms. I'm going to tell you something that you and your brother both need to know, and I need this to resonate in your soul, I said. His eyes locked on mine. Well, more on my mouth than my eyes, but it was good enough. You're both idiots. His gaze tore away from my lips and his eyes narrowed. I squished his cheeks together before he could snarl at me. And if either of you wastes one more damn day on the fact that you two have both worked so hard and given so much to this town in your own ways, then the idiocy is terminal and there's no cure. I released his face and leaned back.
If this is your way of cheering me up about my brother getting shot, you suck at it.
My smile spread slowly. Take it from me, Viking. You and your brother have a chance to fix things and have an actual relationship. Some of us aren't that lucky. Some burnt bridges can't be rebuilt. Don't burn one over something as stupid as money.
That only works if he wakes the fuck up,
he reminded me. I blew out a breath. Yeah, I know. We sat in silence. His knee and arm were warm and firm against mine. Mr. Morgan? A nurse in blue scrubs stepped into the room. Knox and I both came to our feet. I wondered if he realized he'd taken my hand. Your brother is awake and he's asking for you, she said. I blew out a sigh of relief.
How is he?
Knox asked. Groggy, and he's looking at a long recovery, but the surgical team is happy. The tension in his back and shoulders loosened. I gave his hand a squeeze. On that note, I think I'll head home to get Waylay's cereal and dish detergent ready. He tightened his grip on my hand.
Can we have a minute?
He asked the nurse. Sure, I'll be right outside. I'll take you to him as soon as you're ready. He waited until she stepped outside before drawing me in close.
Thank you, Naomi,
he whispered, just before his lips met mine. Hot, hard, unyielding. His hand slid up to cup my jaw and neck, holding me in place as he kissed every thought out of my head, leaving me nothing but a riot of sensation. He pulled back, eyes fierce. Then he pressed a kiss to my forehead and left the room.
22. One hatchet, two bullets. Knox.
You look like shit,
Nash rasped. The lights were on low in the room. My brother was propped up in his hospital bed, chest bare to reveal bandages and gauze over his left shoulder. Machines beeped, screens glowed. He looked pale, vulnerable. My hands clenched into fists at my sides. I could say the same about you, I said, rounding the bed slowly to sink into the chair by the dark window.
Looks worse than it is.
His voice was barely a whisper. I rested my elbows on my knees and tried to look relaxed, but inside, a rage simmered in my gut. Someone had tried to end Nash's life. You didn't mess with a Morgan and walk away from it.
Some asshole tried to kill you tonight. You mad someone almost beat you to it?
They know who did it, I asked. The corner of his mouth lifted as if it were too much effort to smile.
Why? You gonna get him back?
You almost died, Nash. Graves said you came this close to bleeding out before the ambulance got there. The truth of it had bile rising in my throat.
It's gonna take more than a couple of bullets and a wrestling match to end me,
he assured me. I ran my palms over my knees, back and forth, trying to tamp down the anger, the need to break something. Naomi was here. Even as I said it, I didn't know why. Maybe just saying her name out loud made everything feel a little more bearable.
Of course she was. She thinks I'm hot.
I don't care how many bullet holes you've got in you. I'm moving on that, I told him. Nash's sigh was closer to a wheeze.
About damn time. Quicker you screw it up, the quicker I can swoop in and be the good guy.
Fuck off, dick.
Hey, who's the one in the hospital bed, asshole? I'm a damn hero. Women can't resist a hero with bullet holes.
The hero in question winced when he shifted in the bed, his hand reaching for the tray, then falling back to the mattress. I rose and poured the water bottle into the waiting cup. Yeah, well, maybe you should stay in here out of my way for a couple of days. Give me a shot at fucking it all up. I pushed the cup and straw to the edge of the tray and watched him reach for it with his good arm. Beads of sweat appeared on his forehead, and his hand shook as his fingers closed around the plastic. I'd never seen him like this. I'd seen him every other way. Hungover, wrung out from the flu bug of 1996, exhausted after pouring his heart out in the homecoming football game his senior year. But I'd never seen him look weak. Another nurse pulled back the curtain with an apologetic smile.
Just checking the fluids, he said.
Nash gave him a thumbs up, and we lapsed into silence while the nurse busied himself with IVs. My brother was hooked to a half dozen machines in the ICU. and I'd gone years with barely speaking to him. "How's your pain?" the nurse asked.
"Fine, practically non-existent."
His answer was too quick, his mouth too tight. My brother had played the second half of that homecoming game with a broken wrist, because he might be the nice brother, the good brother, but he didn't like showing weakness any more than I did. "He's in it," I tattled to the nurse.
"Don't listen to him,"
Nash insisted, but he couldn't hide the grimace when he shifted on the mattress.
"A bullet just ripped its way through your torso, Chief. You don't have to be in pain to heal," he said.
"Yeah, you do," he countered.
"Pain is what tells you you're alive. You numb that, and how do you know you're still here?"
"She thinks we're both idiots," I said when the nurse left. Nash gave a wheeze, followed by a racking cough that looked like it was going to tear him apart before collapsing back on the bed. I watched the green spikes on his heart rate monitor slowly settle.
"Who?"
he said finally.
"Naomi." "Why would Naomi think I'm an idiot?"
he asked wearily. "Told her why things are the way they are."
"She wasn't impressed with your Robin Hood routine or my manly independence?"
"Not even a little."
"She may have made a few points."
"About what?"
"About
how she thought it was over a woman, not money." Nash's head was slowly lolling to the side, his eyelids getting heavier.
"So love is worth a family feud, but a few million isn't?"
That was the gist of it.
"Can't say she's wrong."
"Then why the fuck didn't you just suck it up and make it right?" I snapped. Nash's smile was a ghost. His eyes were closed.
"You're the big brother. And you were the one trying to make me beholden to you by shoving cash down my throat."
"The only reason I'm not kicking your ass right now is you're attached to too many machines." He gave me a weak middle finger.
"Jesus," I grumbled.
"I didn't want you to be beholden or whatever the fuck to me. We're family, we're brothers. One of us wins, we both win. It also meant if one of us lost, we both did. And that was what the last few years had been. A loss.
Fuck, I hated losing." "Didn't want the money,"
he said, his words slurring.
"Wanted to build things on my own."
"You could have put it away for retirement or some shit," I complained. The same old cocktail of feelings was trying to rise in me. Rejection, failure, righteous fury. "You deserved some good. After the shit we went through, then Liza J losing Pop, you deserved more than a cop salary from some shitty town."
"Our shitty town," he corrected. "Made it ours. You in your way, me in mine."
Maybe he was right. But that didn't matter. What did matter was the fact that if he would have taken the cash, he wouldn't be here in this hospital room. My little brother would be making a difference some other way, without towing the line, without paying the price. "Should have kept the money. If you had, you wouldn't be lying here like roadkill." Nash shook his head slowly against the pillow.
"I was always gonna be the good guy."
"Shut up and go to sleep," I told him.
"We went through some shit, but I always had my big brother. Always knew I could count on you. Didn't need your money on top of that."
Nash's shoulders sagged. Sleep took him under its spell, leaving me to sit in silent vigil. The automatic doors opened, spilling me and a cloud of air conditioning into the humidity of the breaking dawn. I'd stayed by Nash's bedside, letting my rage simmer, knowing what came next. I wanted to punch a hole through the building's facade. I wanted to bring a tidal wave of retribution down on the person responsible. Idly, I picked up one of the smooth rocks from a flower bed and ran my fingers over it, wanting to send it flying, to break something on the outside instead of feeling all the cracks on the inside. I wouldn't do that if I were you. I closed my fingers around the rock and squeezed. What are you doing here, Lucy? Lucian leaned against the limestone column just beyond the hospital entrance, the end of his cigarette glowing brighter as he sucked in a drag. He only allowed himself one cigarette a day. I guess this counted. What do you think I'm doing? Holding up the building, hitting on sexy surgeons? He flicked ash to the ground, eyes locked on me. How is he? I thought of the pain, the exhaustion, the side of my brother I'd never seen before. Okay, or at least he's gonna be. Who did it? The cool, dispassionate tone didn't fool me. We were down to business now. Lucian may not have been blood, but he was a Morgan in every way that counted, and he wanted justice as badly as I did. Cops don't know. Graves said the car was stolen. Nash hasn't given them a description of the suspect yet. Does he remember what happened? I shrugged and squinted up at the sky that was turning pink and purple as the sun worked its way off the horizon. I don't know, man. He was pretty fucked up on anesthesia and whatever they put in his IV. I'll start digging, Lucian assured me. Let me know what you find. I'm not getting cut out of this. Of course not. He studied me for a beat. You look like shit. You should get some sleep. People keep telling me that. Lucian, on the other hand, looked like he'd just walked out of the boardroom in a slick suit sans tie. Maybe you should listen, he said. He almost died, Luce. After I was an asshole to him, he almost bled out in a fucking ditch. Lucian stubbed out his cigarette in the concrete ashtray. We'll make it right. I nodded. I knew we would. This wouldn't stand, and the man who'd put a bullet in my brother would pay. And you'll make the rest of it right, too, he said, words clipped. You both wasted enough fucking time. It's done now. Only Lucian Rawlins could make a statement like that and will it into reality. I thought of Naomi's proclamation. Maybe we had been idiots wasting time we thought we'd had. It's done, I agreed. Good. I was tired of my childhood best friends acting like they were still children. Is that why you came back? His expression darkened. One of the reasons. One of those other reasons have anything to do with a pretty little librarian who hates your guts? He sighed, absently patting his pockets. Already had your one, I reminded him. Fuck, he muttered. It was as flustered as he allowed himself to get. I had the temper. Nash had the good nature, and Lucian had the self-control of a fucking monk. Whatever happened with you two, anyway? I asked, enjoying the distraction of his discomfort. Your brother is in an ICU bed, Lucian said. That's the only reason I'm not knocking your teeth out right now. As close as we'd all been, the one thing Lucian never shared was what made Sloan hate him. Up until last night, I'd thought the feeling was mutual. But I'd seen his face when he saw her, when she walked away. I didn't know much about feelings, but whatever was written all over his face didn't look like hate to me. You probably don't even remember how to throw a punch, I teased. All those conference room negotiations. You just sick your lawyers on people instead of delivering a nice right cross to the face. Bet it's less satisfying. You can take the boy out of knock 'em out, but you can't take the knock 'em out of the boy, he said. I hoped it was true. Appreciate you being here. He nodded. I'll stay with him until Liza comes back in. That'd be good, I said. We stood in silence, legs braced as the sun rose, adding gold to the pink and purple. A new day had officially begun.
A lot of things were going to change, and I was keyed up to make it all happen. Get some sleep. Lucian dug into his pocket and tossed me his keys. Take my car. I caught them midair and hit the unlock button. A shiny Jaguar blinked its headlights at me from a primo parking spot. Always did have good taste. Some things never change. But some things had to. I'll see you later, man. He nodded, and then I surprised the hell out of us both by wrapping him in a hard, one-armed hook. Missed you, brother.
23. Knox Knox. Who's there? Naomi. I was torn from a fitful sleep on the couch by pounding at the front door. Disoriented, I stumbled around the coffee table and tried to remember where I was. The $20,000 in cash, still tucked away in my apron. Nash. Knox. Waylay's first day of school. No wonder I'd fallen prey to a nap attack. I opened the door and found a freshly showered Knox standing on the welcome mat. Waylon trotted inside, wagging his tail. Hey, I croaked. A man of few words, Knox said nothing and stepped over the threshold. I rubbed the sleep from my eyes. He looked tense, like he was spoiling for a fight. Well, if he'd come here for a fight, he was going to be disappointed. I was too tired to deliver one. How's your brother? I ventured. He shoved a hand through his hair.
Long recovery ahead, but he'll be okay. Get Way off to school this morning?
His brother had been shot, and the man remembered to ask about Waylay's first day. I didn't know how to reconcile that with the jerk who yelled at me in front of his own customers. If he could ever settle fully into the thoughtful grump and give up the pissed-off bad boy, he'd make some woman very lucky someday. Yeah, I yawned. She slept at Liza's last night since I didn't get home until late. Liza, Steph, and I made her send-off breakfast there. Steph made chocolate chip pancakes, even though I told him spikes in blood sugar make kids tired and unfocused at school. I was tired and unfocused, not because of pancakes, but because Knox's edginess made me nervous. Speaking of Steph, I think he and Jeremiah might be into each other, I said, grasping for a topic that would warrant some kind of verbal reaction. But Knox remained silent as he prowled the tiny living room, looking much too big to belong here. He was a man with a lot of feelings locked up tight. Part of me wanted to crack him open. The other part wanted to just go back to bed and forget everything for a few hours. Do you want some coffee? Maybe some alcohol? I offered, following him as he moved toward the kitchen, his hands clenching into fists only to release again, over and over again. I didn't have any beer, and the hardest alcohol in the house was a cheap rosé I'd been planning to crack open with Sloane. But I could sacrifice it for the guy whose brother had just been shot. He picked up the pretty yellow leaf on the counter. I'd found it in the lane that morning after walking Waylay to the bus. The temperature still said summer, but the change to fall was inevitable. Waylon hopped up on the couch in the living room. Well, make yourself at home, I told the dog. When I turned to face Knox, he was closing the distance between us.
Naomi.
His voice was rough as it caressed the syllables of my name, and then his hands were on me, yanking me into him. His mouth found mine, and I was lost to sensation, drowning in desire. Neither of us wanted to want this. Maybe that's what made it feel so damn good. One hand slid into my hair while the other pressed my lower back until I was flush against him. Knox, I breathed. This isn't what you want, I reminded him.
It's what I need,
he said before diving back into the kiss. This wasn't the kiss from the waiting room. This was different, desperate. I lost myself in it. Every thought tumbled out of my head until I was nothing but feeling. His mouth was hard and demanding, just like the man. I softened under him, welcoming him. He responded by tugging at my hair to angle my head just the way he wanted as he slanted his mouth over mine. His tongue didn't twine or dance with mine, it battled mine into submission. He stole my breath, my logic, every reason why this was a terrible idea. He took them all and made them disappear.
"That's what I need, baby. I need to feel you go soft under me. Need you to let me have you."
I couldn't tell if this was dirty talk or romantic prose. Whichever side of the line his words fell on, I loved it. His fingers found the strap of my dress. My heartbeat skittered into high gear as he slid the fabric an inch down my shoulder, leaving my skin burning. He needed this. Me. And I lived to be needed. I reached for his shirt and slid my hands under the hem, finding the rigid muscle under warm skin. For once in his life, Knox appeared to be feeling helpful and yanked the shirt over his head with one hand. God, all that skin and muscle and ink. I dragged my nails over his chest and he growled into my mouth. "Yes, please." With one deft swipe, he shoved the strap of my dress off my shoulder, then did the same to the other one.
"About time I find out what you've got on under these dresses," he murmured.
I sank my teeth into his lower lip and yanked hard on his belt. I cursed myself for putting on my least sexy underwear this morning, but at least I hadn't bothered with a bra this morning. Between unsexy undies and unshackled boobs, I figured it all evened out. He lost his jeans at about the same moment my dress slithered down my body and pooled at my ankles.
"God damn it, baby, I fucking knew it."
His mouth was on my neck, nibbling and kissing its way south. I shivered.
Knew what? That you'd look like this. That you had a fuck me body.
He cupped one breast greedily. He backed me into the fridge, and the cold metal had me yelping.
"Knox!" "I'd apologize, but you know I'm not the least bit sorry,"
he said as his tongue darted out to stroke my aching nipple. I was no longer capable of forming words. I was no longer capable of drawing in a breath. All I could do was cup his erection through his boxer briefs and hang on for dear life. When his lips closed over my nipple and he started to suck, the back of my head hit the fridge. Those deep, decadent pulls echoed all over my body, and I had a feeling he knew it. He didn't stop sucking as he shoved his free hand into my unsexy underwear. We both moaned when his fingers found me.
"Knew it,"
he muttered again as his mouth moved to my other breast.
"Knew you'd be wet for me."
My moan turned into a cry when he parted my slit with two fingers. The man knew what he was doing. There was no fumbling, no wasted, awkward movements. Even driven by need, every touch was magic.
"Need to feel you from the inside," he said, brushing his beard over my sensitized nipple.
When his fingers thrust into me, my knees buckled. He was too much, too skilled, expert level, professional ruiner of vaginas, and I didn't know if I could keep up. When he started moving those amazing fingers, I decided I didn't care. His penis flexed in my grip. I clumsily shoved his briefs down, freeing his thick shaft, and gripped it hard. Knox straightened on a groan and dropped his forehead to mine as we worked each other with eager hands.
"Need you in a bed,"
he growled as a drop of moisture leaked over my fingers. I gripped him harder, stroked faster. I sure hope you can get us to one, because I can't walk.
Damn, baby. Slow the fuck down, he ordered through gritted teeth.
But I wasn't listening. I was too busy matching the pump of his fingers inside me. I gasped when he pulled out of my throbbing core. Mean, I hissed against his neck. But just when my body felt desolate over the loss, he tossed me over his shoulder. Knox! His only acknowledgement was a resounding slap on my behind.
Which room?
He demanded, taking the stairs two at a time. I was dizzy with lust and vertigo. This one, I managed. In seconds, I found myself on my back in bed with the naked Knox ranging himself over me. Oh my God, is this really happening? Whoops, I hadn't actually meant to say that out loud.
Do not come to your senses yet, he ordered.
No sense here, promise. He was too busy looking pained to be amused. I couldn't blame him after I got my first good look at his erection. It was arousing, intimidating. A thick, purple-headed leader in the world of erect penises. I got a little dizzy when Knox fisted it. I hoped to God he knew how to use it. Few things were more disappointing in this life than a well-endowed man who had no clue how to use his equipment. Apparently, it wasn't time to find out, though, because Knox slid down my body, parting my legs and draping them over his shoulders. When he pressed his face between my legs, my stomach muscles contracted so hard I worried I'd pulled something. Oh, God. His beard was abrasive between my thighs, and I freaking loved it. His tongue. For being a man of few words, his tongue was pure magic. He paired long, greedy strokes with short, shallow thrusts. In a matter of seconds, I was ready to come. Wait, 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 I whimpered, gripping his hair. He stopped immediately, earning serious points.
What's wrong? You okay?
Concern warred with need in those steely blue-gray eyes. This is a one-time thing. I needed to say it aloud. To remind myself that this was the one and only time I was going to let Knox Morgan make me come.
One time,
he agreed, still watching me closely.
Final offer.
Don't talk like a game show host when your face is between my legs.
Don't ask me to have a conversation when you were just about to come on my goddamn tongue.
Point taken, I said. My insides were actually pulsing with greedy desire. One-time thing. Make it count.
Then you better hang the fuck on.
It was a good thing I did as he told me, because a second or two after my hands wrapped around the brass headboard, he did something magical with his tongue at the same time that he crooked his fingers inside me and my entire body imploded. I closed so tight around his fingers I worried he was going to need an X-ray. Not worried enough to stop and check, of course, because I was in the middle of the best orgasm of my life, and I had priorities. If I had broken his fingers, he didn't seem to mind, because he just kept right on licking me through my bone-shattering release.
Still coming. I can feel you,
he said on a groan. At least that's what I thought he said. My ears were ringing like I was in a church bell tower on Sunday morning. Gonna need a minute, I gasped, fighting to get oxygen into my lungs.
Uh-uh, making it count,
he said from somewhere that sounded very far away.
Besides, I want to slide my cock in you while you're still coming.
Okay. I heard the distinct crinkle of the wrapper from either a Pop-Tart or a condom. It appeared to be the latter, because the wide crest of his erection was prodding at my very core. He paused long enough to swipe his tongue over each of my breasts before rising up on his knees. He looked like a vengeful warrior, tattooed and muscled. his lids heavy, chest heaving. At least I wasn't the only one having a damn good time, I realized. It was my last coherent thought before he thrust his hips and buried that long, thick weapon of mass destruction inside me. Our eyes locked, and his face froze in agonized pleasure and triumph as he hit the very end of me. I didn't realize I'd spasmed up into an ab curl until he put one of those big hands on my chest and pressed me back down to the mattress. "Relax, baby. Relax," he whispered. I let out the breath that had been trapped in my lungs and sucked in another. He was so damn big. And he was right. I could feel the tiny little tremors working my muscles around him.
"You keep milking my dick like that, sweetheart, and this is gonna have to be a two-time thing."
Good. Yes. He grinned down at me.
"So this is what it takes for you to lose that fancy vocabulary of yours."
"Ugh, are you gonna talk all day, or are you going to move?" I grumbled. The need was already building in me again. I wondered if Knox's cock was some sort of magical wand that cast orgasm spells, rendering things like rally time and biological requirements non-existent.
"Look at me, Naomi," he said.
I did as I was told.
"God damn it, you're beautiful. And so fucking wet for me."
And he was rock hard for me. That's when he started to move. Slowly, languidly, sweat glistened on his skin. His jaw was set, but his hips pumped like a metronome as he glided in and out of me. It felt like heaven, but I could tell he was holding himself back, and I wanted to give him everything he needed, wanted him to take it. "Don't be gentle," I groaned.
"Taking my time. Deal with it."
"Knox, if you get any more blood in that appendage, it's going to explode."
"You've got an opinion on everything, even on how I fuck you."
"Especially on how you fuck me." He kissed me, probably just to shut me up, but I didn't care, because when I hitched my hips higher, his thrusts came faster, went deeper. He was pushing me just past my comfort zone, making me take a little more than I was confident I could handle. And damn if I didn't get off on it. He was giving me what I needed without me having to spell it out for him and break it down, without me having to ask, without him saying, "Maybe it's just easier if you do it yourself."
"Come back to me, Daisy."
I blinked, and Knox's face came back into focus, hovering over me and looking serious.
"You're right here when I'm inside you, nowhere else. Got me?"
I nodded, embarrassed that I'd nearly gotten lost inside my head. He was right. How many times had I gotten so wrapped up in my plans and lists that I missed what was right in front of me, or in this case, inside me? To prove I was with him, I sank my nails into his shoulders and squeezed my muscles around his shaft as he drove deep.
"That's my girl," he groaned.
What we were doing felt so good, so right. His chest hair tickled my puckered nipples as my heels dug into those perfect ass cheeks of his. Another orgasm was already starting to build. It felt otherworldly good. He felt it too. His thrusts were harder now, less controlled, and I wanted more.
"Can't decide how I want you,"
he confessed through gritted teeth.
"Thought about too many ways."
"You have?" I breathed, trying to sound surprised, like I didn't have a regular fantasy of him banging me bent over the pool table at honky-tonk. He nipped at my bottom lip.
"Up against a wall in my office, my hand over your mouth so no one can hear me making you come. You riding me in my truck, these perfect tits in my face so I can suck you while I fuck you, on your hands and knees looking over your shoulder while I work you from behind."
Okay, those were pretty good. My breasts felt heavy, swollen. Every nerve ending in my body was lighting up. and those ab muscles I thought I'd torn with my first orgasm were tensing again.
Fuck, baby, you just keep getting tighter.
I could feel every vein, every ridge, every inch of his arousal as he drove into me. Again and again, he rammed himself home. Euphoria filled my head like a fog. His muscles were taut under my fingers. We were both shaking. I was going to come with him inside me and never be the same again. He forced a hand between us and cupped my breast, my greedy nipple pebbling against his palm.
Take it all, baby.
And I did, opening as wide as I could and holding on for dear life as he drove me over the edge. He didn't ease me into the orgasm. He detonated it. It shot through me like high voltage, making me tremble from head to toe. I buried my face in his neck and screamed.
Ah, fuck! Fuck!
I opened my eyes to find him powering into me, eyes half closed, all vestiges of control snapped. I felt his erection swell inside me as he grunted on the next thrust and the next. I was still coming when he jerked inside me, letting out a guttural shout of triumph. He buried himself deep and held there. Our bodies aligned, releases synchronizing. With every wrenching pulse of his erection, my muscles gripped him tighter.
Naomi,
he growled into my neck as we rode it out together, hearts pounding as one. 24. Uninvited Guests. Naomi. A soft snore startled me from my incredibly steamy dream about Knox Morgan. When I heard the snore again, felt the warm, hard body against me, my eyelids